Tommy McNeil. Former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden was at Center Stage Thursday on the second night of Democratic presidential debates on the NBC network. Biden once again said he is the better alternative than President Trump, and he used tax cuts as one example.
Look, Donald Trump has put us in a horrible situation. We do have enormous income inequality. And the one thing I agree on is we can make massive cuts in the $1.6 trillion in tax loopholes out there, and I would be going about eliminating Donald Trump's tax cuts for the wealthy.
U.S. Senator Kamala Harris outlined some of her priorities if she were president and why she is a better alternative than President Trump.
That is why I support a Green New Deal. It is why I believe on day one, and as president, will re-enter us in the Paris Agreement, because we have to take these issues seriously. And frankly, we have a president of the United States. We talked about, you asked before, what is the greatest national security threat to the United States? It's Donald Trump.
Biden currently leads Democratic voter preference surveys for the party's presidential nomination, but he was facing some of the biggest rivals before a live audience in Miami, Florida, with millions watching on national television, again on NBC. President Trump has a full day of meetings with foreign leaders at the G20 summit in Osaka, Japan on Friday. He's already met with his host, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. He thanked the Japanese Prime Minister for support and for increasing placement of Japanese car factories in the United States. President is also meeting with German Chancellor Angela Merkel, Russian President Vladimir Putin, and Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro. Mr. Trump is meeting Saturday with the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, China's President Xi Jinping, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. President Trump has criticized Thursday's Supreme Court ruling that blocks a citizenship question on next year's census, at least for now. Mr. Trump said he has asked his lawyers if there is a way to delay that count. AP correspondent Mike Hempen explains.
The vote was 5-4, with Chief Justice John Roberts joining the four liberals in voting against the question. The high court describes the administration's reason for wanting to add the question as more of a distraction than an explanation. It's unclear whether the administration will have time to provide a more detailed account. Census forms are supposed to begin printing next week. Census Bureau experts predict millions of Hispanics and immigrants would not be counted if the census asks everyone if he or she is an American citizen. Mike Hemp in Washington.
The U.S. Senate on Thursday approved a massive yearly authorization for America's armed forces that includes a new round of sanctions against North Korea and comes amid a fuel of debate on President Trump's latitude to take military action against Iran. The vote was 86-8. The National Defense Authorization Act budgets $750 billion for the Pentagon for the 2020 fiscal year, which begins in October. That is up from $716 billion this year. It allows for the full universe of activities conducted by the branches of America's armed forces. In addition, it authorizes the creation of a U.S. Space Force at the behest of the Trump administration. It mandates cybersecurity initiatives and sets forth a 3.1% pay raise for military personnel. The U.S. House of Representatives has voted 305-102 to approve a $4.6 billion Senate bill to provide additional emergency aid at the U.S.-Mexico border. We get more from AP correspondent Tim McGuire.
The House passed the Senate's $4.6 billion measure to provide funding for agencies providing care for tens of thousands of migrants along the border with Mexico. Before the vote, Speaker Nancy Pelosi promised she and other Democrats will continue the fight against the Trump administration's immigration policies.
It will be the battle cry as how we go forward to protect children.
Earlier, Texas Democratic Congresswoman Veronica Escobar noted that the photo of a father and his toddler daughter who drowned in the Rio Grande represents
tens of thousands of migrants who have died as they have tried to build a better life for themselves.
President Trump has promised to sign the bill. Tim McGuire, Washington.
When the state of North Carolina drew its most recent political map, state lenders and leaders split a historically black university in Greensboro into two congressional districts that critics say diluted the voting power of African Americans. Well, lawmakers are now again defending that and discussing that as a partisan gerrymandering. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Friday, June the 28th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you. In Ethiopia, the state media says that nearly 250 people have been arrested in the country's capital of Addis Ababa and others from the main city of its Amhara region. The arrests are in relation to Saturday's foiled coup attempt. And in Sudan, a new joint proposal from the African Union and Ethiopia for a resolution to the crisis in that country was presented to protest leaders. The International Organization for Migration says that it has succeeded in rescuing nearly 20,000 migrants from near death in the Sahara Desert over the past 2.5 years. Nigerian's Chamber of Commerce says that the country is losing $19 billion a year to gridlock, bribery, and corruption at its ports.
You don't need to have people packing over 2,000, 3,000 trucks between Igomo and Apapa, and defecating on the road, buffing on the road, sleeping on the road.
That is Atetekumbo Kayode of the Nigerian's Chamber of Commerce. In Kenya, the government is distancing itself from remarks by a local member of parliament.
What that MP did is very shameful and very embarrassing to the country. I hope he finds it in himself at some point to apologize, not to us as government, to apologize to the people of Kenya for embarrassing all of us.
That is Kenya's Interior Secretary, Fred Matiang'i. We have those stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And we start off in Ethiopia, where the state media says that nearly 250 people have been arrested in the country's capital of Addis Ababa and others from the main city of its Amhara region. The arrests are in relation to Saturday's foiled coup attempt. The state-run Ethiopian Broadcasting Corporation gave no details on who was arrested, but a party based in the northern region, the National Movement of Amhara, said that 56 of its members had been detained in Addis Ababa on Wednesday. Earlier this week, a judge granted police 28 days to investigate those detained in connection with the alleged coup plot. In Sudan, the protest movement says that it was presented with a new joint proposal from the African Union and Ethiopia. The two mediating parties are helping find a resolution that is agreeable to both the military council and the pro-democracy movement. Earlier this week, Sudan's military rulers refused to agree on a proposal drafted by Ethiopia calling for a power-sharing agreement with the country's pro-democracy movement. The International Organization for Migration says that it has succeeded in rescuing nearly 20,000 migrants from near death in the Sahara Desert over the past 2.5 years when it began its life-saving operation. IOM says that the group included men, women, and children from 14 West African countries, mainly from Guinea, Conakry, Mali, and Ivory Coast. The migrants were bound for North Africa, a stepping stone to Europe.
We know that probably thousands of victims aren't even, their remains aren't even evident anymore because they're covered by sand or consumed by animals. We can only rely on what, on luck, I would say mostly, and the ability to get resources marshaled. Sometimes local authorities can be very helpful. Sometimes resources are really stretched.
That is IOM spokesman Joel Millman speaking to VOA. Nigeria's Chamber of Commerce says that the country is losing $19 billion a year to gridlock, bribery, and corruption at its ports. The country's vice president says a solution is underway, but truck drivers waiting for weeks to unload their goods are not so sure. Timothy Obezu reports from Lagos.
24-year-old truck driver Abimbola Timiji has been waiting for weeks at this temporary port in Lagos for his truck to be passed to the main port. Dimeji says he arrived here on the 7th of May. This is where I have been staying. This is where I've been sleeping. I can't go home because I don't want anything to happen to the load I'm carrying because I'll be held responsible for it. Like Dimeji, other truck drivers are waiting their turn. Some say they've been here for months. Nigeria's Chamber of Commerce says the country is losing $19 billion a year, or about 5% of its total GDP, because of bottlenecks at ports like this. The president of the Chamber's Abuja chapter, Adetokunbo Kayode, says the situation is especially bad in Lagos.
You don't need to have people packing over 2,000, 3,000 trucks between Igomo and Apapa and defecating on the road, bathing on the road, sleeping on the road, putting tremendous, unbelievable amount of weight and pressure on those bridges. Those bridges were built on stilts, on reclaimed ground. You know the terrain of that place is waterlogged. And they are more than 40, 50 years old.
Apapa Wharf in Lagos is the busiest in Nigeria and serves as an entry and exit point for many goods and businesses. But issues of delay here have escalated. It takes an average of 3 weeks to clear products from the port, compared to 48 hours in neighboring Benin and Ghana. Nigerian port authorities opened this mini port to serve as a temporary passage for truck drivers in order to decongest the main port. But the head of the Truck Drivers Association, Saka Salami, is accusing port authorities of willful neglect of responsibilities. Inside the port, they don't work. If you go inside, you see for yourself that they're not working. They're the ones responsible for this holdup. We just opened this place. We don't know how it will be tomorrow, but we've been here for about 2 to 3 months now. Aside from delays, extortion, bribery, corruption, and fear of clashes between drivers are slowing activities here. Trucking firms in Nigeria have also increased prices to make up for time lost. Nigeria's Vice President Yemi Osinbajo visited the port last weekend for his second time in 2 years and says the government is improving port infrastructures and installing a call-up system for truck drivers. Until that happens, drivers like Dimeji are stuck waiting and can only hope things will get better. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Lagos.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Gambians are reacting with shock and anger following the recent allegations that women were allegedly raped by former President Yahya Jammeh. Testimonies at the ongoing Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission appear to show gross human rights violations during the former president's rule. The TRRC was established to investigate the former president's term in office from 1994 to 2017, following reports of human rights violations, including kidnappings and murder. But supporters of the former president have denied accusations Jammeh committed sexual violence against women. They say he was a good man who helped empower Gambian women. And for reaction to the latest accusation against former President Jammeh, VOA's Peter Clotty reached Madi Jabote, a human rights defender and pro-democracy advocate for hashtag Gambia We Want, a consortium of civil society organizations.
People are reacting to it in a pretty shocking way, with anger, with surprise, interestingly. Of course, you would still have some of his supporters who are seeking to question or to even deny the allegations. But generally, Gambians are really angry, shocked, and annoyed. But at the same time, also, a lot of folks are not actually surprised, because currently we have a truth commission that is exposing a lot of the human rights violations that took place at the time. And of course, I mean, over the period, this the story of Jammeh associating with women has always been there. I mean, in fact, he is generally been considered as a notorious womanizer.
Some of his supporters are denying that a leading member of the opposition party, his party, rejects the accusations. However, some are saying that more women should be invited to the TRRC to know what happened to them, because the rumor has been that the man has been preying on women for a very long time. So this is the right opportunity for women who were allegedly abused during his time to come out. What do you say to that?
Yes, I would wish the TRRC has a list of things that they would want to look at. And I haven't seen that final list, but I hope the issue of Jammeh's violations of women be one of them. You know, because indeed, I think it is very important citizens know this to also have an understanding of the bigger picture of the nature of power, which actually feeds directly into how we handle leaders and our entire governance and democratic dispensation. Even though I think it will still be very difficult also to get women come forward to narrate their story, their experience with Jammeh, because of the sociocultural setting, I mean, I think most women would find it difficult to come out publicly to explain how they associated with Jammeh. I mean, even if you had raped them, simply because that also carries some sort of a stigma. You know, a lot of these women would not have the courage or, you know, really to do that. And I'm sure a lot of them also would have families that would advise them not to do so unless they bring some kind of attention on the family. So that would be a barrier. But otherwise, I think DRRC should do all efforts to encourage such women to really come forward. And personally, I guess citizens need to really understand that women that come out to express themselves, to narrate their experience, should really be celebrated and not be vilified or stigmatized in any way.
Some are saying that it is only fair for former President Yahya Jammeh to be invited to testify before the TRRC to defend himself and his administration. Some of his supporters are saying all these are made up just to tarnish his reputation. What is your stance?
Finally, I think he needs to come and testify before the TRRC. I mean, particularly on sexual violence, on the, you know, as it is. Yes, Jammeh's got supporters, and some of the supporters, I'm not sure any amount of evidence, any kind of witness could convince them that indeed Jammeh was a terrible despot. So some of these folks have sort of, you know, connected themselves so passionately with him that they just deny, and that you would find anyway, with any dictator anywhere in the world, that in any case, there would still be some supporters who would deny. So, but I think he definitely needs to come and testify for his own good, and also for the good of the society, you know, because understanding these things helps us to build a new society, a new people.
One of the cousins of Yahya Jammeh, who they allege Yahya Jammeh uses to lure other women to him, should the TRRC also invite the alleged cousin to come before to talk about this issue?
Yeah, I think it's not enough to have Jammeh just come and testify. But, I mean, he definitely had individuals, his cousin, but also among the security forces and, you know, his civilian, you know, henchmen, who were really helping him to pick, you know, women, you know, get him women. And at one point, you know, at State House itself, you normally find very beautiful women, I mean, young ladies who are said to be protocol officers. How did they come to be protocol officers all of a sudden? I mean, you know, so I think a lot more people need to testify, and I hope the Truth Commission is doing investigations to find out really who are these individuals who are facilitating the, you know, bringing of women to Jammeh, you know, so that we get to know the full story, the extent of this, I mean, scheme, and how many women were victims, and you know, what happened to them, and so on.
That was Madi Jabote, a human rights defender and pro-democracy advocate for hashtag Gambia We Want, speaking to VOA's Peter Clotty. The Kenyan government has distanced itself from recent remarks made by a local member of parliament in which he's said to have called for attacks against foreigners working in his constituency. The member of parliament, Charles Njagua, is currently in custody after his arrest on Wednesday of this week. Kenya's Ministry of East African Community says that the views expressed by the legislator do not reflect the view of the government and the people of Kenya. For more on this, Maureen Ojambo has the story.
The arrest of Starehe Member of Parliament Charles Njagua raised an uproar in Kenyan Parliament as members protected his sentiment, saying it was for the good of Kenyans. Defending Njagua over his utterances, that went viral on social media, National Assembly Majority Leader Aden Duale said that the parliament should protect the rights of Kenyans who also work in neighboring countries, as most of them are subjected to harsh working environment.
Kenya is not a dumping ground. We must discuss that. Kenyans' top professionals are not getting jobs in Tanzania. And I'll give an example. Vodafone International appointed Sylvia Mulinge as the head of Vodafone Tanzania. And the president and the government of Tanzania refused her. Today, this country is flooded with the fruits. Even the fruits you eat in Parliament is from Tanzania. Our farmers cannot sell their fruits in either Uganda or Tanzania. And we are here, we must protect. We are here to protect the people of Kenya.
East African community has embarked on one-stop border trade that has seen member states engage in business without much restrictions. Grace Wamboi, a trader working at Gikomba Market in Nairobi, says the Tanzanians working as businessmen at the market are peaceful. I have no problem to do business with the Tanzanians because they are doing business and everyone is on their own and we live as brothers and sisters. So if you say everyone to go back to their country, that means even Kenyans working in Tanzania will have to come back too. Some traders, however, feel that there is not enough space to do their businesses since the foreigners have overpopulated the market that mostly deals with second-hand clothes. A Tanzanian trader, Alan Nicholas, says most of them have been to Kenya for more than 20 years and that the speech by the Member of Parliament will escalate hatred between Kenya and Tanzania. He's saying that we are here by law. We use our passports. And even the government knows we can't hide ourselves. You must have an identity. We are not here by chance. The businesses we run here, we buy goods from Kenyans and sell it to Kenyans. It doesn't mean we get the goods from Tanzania and sell them here. The Kenyan government, through the East African Community and the Interior Ministry, have condemned the legislature's harsh sentiment, saying his views does not reflect the view of Kenyans. Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i has assured foreigners of being safe in Kenya, despite the statement from Jaguar.
What that MP did is very shameful and very embarrassing to the country. I hope he finds it in himself at some point to apologize, not to us as government, to apologize to the people of Kenya for embarrassing all of us for those things that he was saying. And I want to assure our neighbors, all of them in the region, and this is the position of government. I am the Minister for Interior. I am speaking very strongly about this issue.
Nairobi resident magistrate Tobiko Sinkiyan has, however, detained Honorable Jaguar in custody for one more night, awaiting pending bail today, Friday. A Tanzanian Member of Parliament, Livingstone Lusinde, was quoted saying that Tanzania will revert in case Tanzanians working in Kenya will be deported. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
The Tech in Ghana conference took place this month in London. In one of its two annual events, the partner conference takes place in Accra later this year. And founder Okoswa Anobale spoke to Rikish Ryok about the new topics covered and the future of tech in Ghana.
Initially, the idea was to highlight tech in Ghana to a UK audience because coming from the UK initially and us having close ties with London and London being a hub for technology, we felt that that would be a really great place to actually expose what's happening in the industry to a market that doesn't really get to get insight into what's happening in Ghana. Ghana was a place that we knew a lot was happening in, but we felt that the outside world didn't know much about. So London was initially the place that we launched it, and then following bringing the tech industry into London, we found at the time that there weren't many events in Accra itself that was bringing the industry together because we cut right across all the different stakeholders in the industry. So that was what prompted us to also do the same thing in Accra.
This year, you had quite a few speakers from quite a variety of backgrounds. What do you think was the new element to this fifth edition? Because I imagine you have to kind of keep it fresh. You know, what kind of new things and new issues are you guys dealing with?
It's a very wide industry and it goes beyond tech. And, you know, we also kind of delve into innovation as well. One of the biggest, I think, changes for us this year was format, whereby we usually have panel discussions and, you know, topics that are spoken about from a wider context. This year, what we did was we broke down half of the day into deep dive conversations that focused on specific areas such as payment and remittances, blockchain, education and skills.
That was Akosua Anobil, the founder of the Tech in Ghana conference. She was speaking to Ricky Shryok from Accra. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. We go to Samson Omali. Good morning, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, Jackson. We begin the sports news in Egypt, where Africa's biggest sporting spectacle, the 2019 African Cup of Nations, enters its day 8 on Friday with 3 fixtures. In the first match of the day at the Suez Stadium, Mali will take on Tunisia. Mali are tipped as dark horses for the title. They recorded the biggest win of all teams in the opening round of matches, but will have their work cut out for them when they take on the second-ranked team on the continent, Tunisia. In the second game, Morocco will face Cote d'Ivoire, while the late kickoff will be a make-or-break tie for both South Africa and Namibia in the Southern African Derby after both nations fell to a 1-0 opening game defeat to Ivory Coast and Morocco. In Thursday's matches, Michael Olunga scored twice as Kenya edged neighbors Tanzania 3-2 in Cairo to keep their hopes alive of reaching the second round in the African Cup of Nations. The Japan-based forward equalized in the first half and scored the 80th-minute winner in a lively East African derby. Kenya's captain is Victor Wanyama, who plays for English Premiership side Tottenham Hotspur.
It has been difficult for us. We started badly, but today we bounced back. We went down, we came back again. You were trailing 2 times and we came back. We showed the fighting spirit and we showed what we are about. You know, everyone is at it, we are a very good team.
In another Thursday fixture, Riyad Mahrez and Algeria fired a warning shot to the rest of their African Cup of Nations title rivals with a deserved 1-0 win over Sadio Mane's heavily fancied Senegal in Cairo. And elsewhere, African Cup of Nations double tour, Madagascar took a giant stride towards the next round as Marco Ilemhatira hammered home a late free kick to beat Burundi 1-0 in their Group B match on Thursday. Former Zambia football legend Kalusha Bwalya says the increase in the number of teams from 16 to 24 has made this year's tournament more competitive. Kalusha Bwalya, while assessing the performance of the so-called smaller nations, says the performance so far has shown that there is no more gap between the small teams and the so-called big teams on the continent.
The increment from 16 to 24, it is very, very encouraging. In Africa, there are no small teams. So for the teams that are not well-known or they have not had the privilege to qualify, you know, to the Africa Cup, like Benin or Kenya or Tanzania, Burundi, Madagascar, Mauritania. So these teams who have come, I think that they will bring something to the Africa Cup of Nations. I think they will bring a lot of enthusiasm to the Africa Cup of Nations, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that. But also, I think that the teams that were in the big teams, of course, the teams were in the World Cup in last year, I think that they can have a big say in this Africa Cup.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a good day. And that's it for this Friday, June the 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. We want to thank you for spending this week with us. Join us again Monday for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend, Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.